With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are listening to Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
It's Metal Shop here on The Rock, 99.9 KISW, kind of on the phone, sort of, internet-wise. I'm Skyping with Vince Edwards. You might not know his name. He's not, like, in some huge, you know, touring national band, but he has a lot to do with metal, to be exact, Metal Blade Records. He has been employed by Metal Blade Records for quite a while now. Down in California, how you doing, Vince?
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So before we go any further, you do a podcast yourself for Metal Blade Records, and I do believe you're like resurrecting it. What's the deal with the Metal Blade podcast?
Yeah, there's been a couple iterations over the years, and the first one I didn't do, and then a few years after that kind of went away. We tried to do it again, and then one more time after that. And now we're kind of trying to see if it's going to stick this time. It's really kind of a difficult thing to do a podcast for a label.
Yeah.
You know, how do we make it interesting while promoting kind of our artists without being too overly selly and kind of find a format? Because I think a lot of what people like about podcasts is the kind of realness, and you can be a little bit more raw and say things that aren't on the radio. But like we got to kind of be careful about how real we get. So it's been a little bit of a struggle in that regard.
I mean, like, you know, you kind of still want to be, you know, supportive. What if there's like a record that you don't like and on a regular podcast,
right,
you'd be like, man, that's... But like, you know, it's a label podcast. It's like, you know, your idea is to kind of get people out to support the bands. And, you know, like you said, you kind of got to be a certain level of real without being kind of, a dick about it.
We'll definitely have people on that aren't Metal Blade artists as guests from time to time, just kind of people that are either in metal as well or loosely affiliated. We did a little bit of that last time. We got to talk to Sam Didier at Blizzard Entertainment.
Oh, that's awesome.
Some people from NASA at one point. There's a bunch of metalheads at NASA JPL that are out at shows on a pretty regular basis, and we've all kind of become friends with a few of them over the years. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so tell me, to anyone listening right now, obviously continue to listen to this podcast, but once you're done, how do we find your podcast, and when does it come out?
That's what we're working on. Spotify is starting kind of a monetized podcast, somehow like streaming part of their service. I think it actually already did launch. So we're looking at routing it through that,
through
our distributor, and kind of before we had done it all on our own, just pushing out the RSS feeds, all the web tech stuff. I know some web tech stuff, but not to that level. So our web guy would push it out manually, but now we're looking at kind of going through our distributor and making it a little bit more official, if that makes any sense, and getting the episodes up on YouTube as they launch. So we're kind of getting those wheels in motion and seeing when our launch dates can be.
You're going to be the metal Joe Rogan, man.
I wish we could be that interesting and wacky. But it's me and Ryan Williams, who works at Metal Blade, that you might know as Bart from the Black Dahlia Murder from a couple years back.
Yeah.
And Riley McShane, the vocalist for Allegiant. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Right on. Well, imagine that there's actually like money and monetization in podcasting. Who would have ever thought?
Yeah, it's weird, right? I don't know if this will ever get to that point. I mean, it's, in my experience, monetizing anything like this that's kind of new and episodic, you know, it takes a heck of a lot of time and effort. It's like when people try to Twitch stream and things like that, it sounds good to get going, and it doesn't take that much to make some money, but to make a real amount of money, to make the time investment worth it and all that, you really have to bust your ass to get there. So we'll see. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like, I know that, you know, we haven't talked about it yet, but I know that you already bust your ass quite a bit behind the scenes at Metal Blade and stuff. So, I mean, let's get to that. You know, so exactly, like, I came down maybe a few years ago, and I got a tour of the office, and you guys have a really, really cool thing there in kind of an unassuming office complex in Southern California, which is pretty cool. Like, you would just be hanging out, and there's probably like lawyers or dentists around you guys, and then it's just this like unmarked building, and it's just like, you know, Cannibal Corpse, Amon Amarth, King Diamond plaques and stuff. And
we've been at three different offices now since I started at Metal Blade in 2007. Just like every other everyone else in Southern California, mm-hmm. you know, chasing rent and better deals and all those types of things. But the place we're in now is in Sherman Oaks, and yeah, it's totally unassuming, and there's like insurance places and legal offices and financial advisors, and then us. It's great.
So what's exactly your title at Metal Blade? I know I first met you because you handle like a lot of the publicity, and you were originally sending out demo CD or the promo CDs. Now it's mostly handled online and through MP3s and stuff. But what's exactly your title? Because it seems like you do a lot of work behind the scenes on various different fronts.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out right now, actually, what to actually call it.
Okay.
We kind of had a discussion like one day, maybe I should have one, because when I was hired, it was originally just to do college radio promotions, and this was around the time that MySpace was still massive, mm-hmm. and Facebook was just about to launch pages for the first time. That was actually a couple of years after I started, so I was the kind of young guy out of college in the office that could handle all that, so I kind of started the whole social media department as well, which We now have multiple people doing that, and that we have a great need for video content and photography. So I picked up a old Canon camera, and I've since upgraded a couple times, but just picked one up on a weekend and started shooting live shows and music videos. So I've been kind of doing that ever since as well.
And I mean, some of the stuff that I've kind of watched your career as far as that go, just like blow up, man. You went from, like you said, just kind of picking up a camera, and then I've seen some of the videos you've done. You've done videos for Gwar, you've done videos for Amon Amarth, and you've gone on tour with some of these bands. And how did that become, like, did you kind of just take that role upon and then just kind of get better and better and better as you went?
Yeah, I definitely still feel like I'm getting better, and I hate most everything I've ever done. I don't know that you're going to find many people that are just like super stoked on things a couple years later. But yeah, there's some decent stuff in there for sure. And look, when the art is good and the band is good, it makes it a lot easier, right? So a lot of times it's just if the camera's in focus and the shot doesn't look that bad, you know, the band is doing most of the work. But I don't know. It's crazy to look back and see how many I've done, and kind of look ahead and think what kind of crazy nonsense I can whip up here.
Yeah.
I just really dusted off my After Effects. Like I was really rusty, and then I had to do a Black Dahlia Murder lyric video out of nowhere. It was kind of unplanned, and I had a limited time frame. So that kind of like reinvigorated my interest in After Effects after kind of being bummed out on it for a long time. It's hard. It's hard to be creative on deadlines and things like that, where you, if you wake up one day and you don't feel creative, it's not a fucking hobby. You have to do it. You have to figure out a way to make this video interesting.
Yep.
And sometimes that, like, that pressure is just crippling a bit. You have to kind of step away and think about it and let your mind wander before you come up with some cool ideas.
Yeah, dude, I hear you, man. And it's really cool. And is there any way that people can kind of follow some of the work that you do? Is there, do you have like a YouTube channel or anything like that?
I do, yeah. If you go to VinnyEdwards.com, I set that up for some reason like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I do have the YouTube playlist there that is kind of like my collected works. I started it on my personal YouTube channel just to have a record of what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something I like publicly share or whatever. Just I wanted to actually keep track of things I had done over time if I had to reference or whatever. So, you kind of forget after a while how many you've done. And then scroll through YouTube videos of Metal Blade when I'm updating stuff and just think, I forgot I did that like 4 years ago. Holy hell.
What a man, that's awesome. So, with record labels changing, you know, and the music industry evolving and everything, was it? Do you? It may not have been that way intentionally, but do you think that you taking on new roles is kind of a necessity to like stay relevant and stay kind of like evolving with the ever changing industry?
Yeah, and that's really part of it too, right?
Taking labels, on new responsibilities and stuff.
Yeah, we want to help as much as we can to help bands build content and build their image and just continue to grow professionally and make them look more professional. And with that came the need for really quick in-house photography and video production.
Yeah.
And that's really it. It's not that we don't hire out for those things. We hire out some of the most talented human beings on earth to do a lot of the real heavy lifting.
Sure.
But some of the stuff that might be a really truncated timeline or there might be a giant budget for, I can just knock it out and save both the band and the company, a couple $100 here and there, a couple $1,000. And do it in house, and then we have the total control. Then we know the band is going to be happy because, I mean, we of course don't roll anything out without full band approval.
Of course, yeah.
So there's no issues there. So it's not as if, you know, if I screw it up, the band can still say no. There's certainly things, both photo and video, that I've done that never saw the light of day. So ultimately, it's still the band's what the band wants to have out there is going to be out there.
Okay. Man, yeah, so definitely go to VinnyEdwards.com and check out some of his stuff. You'd probably be surprised at some of the artists this guy's worked with. Now, let's get a little bit of like a background on you, man. Like, what got you kind of like the light bulb moment? Do you remember like kind of first getting into music? What got you into heavy music, or like what were some of your first metal CDs or metal concerts? Do you remember?
I was always kind of a naturally skeptical and angry person. So part of that nice. Kind of subversive, yeah. I don't know if you really call it subversive, just contrarian in me kind of drew me to metal. I remember in middle school going to bowling club in Wisconsin and hearing Metallica on the jukebox.
Okay.
You know, those usual things.
Yeah.
And as you discover artists, like I discovered a lot of artists through music choice metal at my grandma's house. Because she had the fancy cable.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that's where I first heard bands like In Flames and Iced Earth and you name it, anything heavy that's not on the radio and heavier than Metallica. Yeah, that was there first. And I talked to Chris Broderick about this not too long ago, that I realized I saw him play with Jagdpanzer, In Flames, and Iced Earth on tour in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
That's crazy.
And I just, one of the only things I remember about Jagdpanzer's set was a really muscular guitar player in a wife beater.
Yes!
You're so I realized one day, holy shit, that's Chris Broderick. Right? I've now shot two music videos with that guy.
That's amazing.
And, you know.
With Act of Defiance?
But yeah, sorry, I'm kind of wandering here. It's been a long day. I'm a little bit tired, but all that kind of led into, I played in bands in high school and college, and I did college radio at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville at a station there. That's really good.
Yeah.
And that turned into just like you talked to me when I was in college radio, I talked to metal labels and they sent over music and that's college radio is actually a place where people get into the music business. There's a load of people that I work with that did college radio. So it really, that's kind of like our farm team for the music industry is college radio. I mean, one of them at least anyway. Metal Blade was looking for someone and I applied my senior year and got hired 2 weeks before I graduated, moved to California, and here I am.
Dude, that's awesome. Shout out to the college radio. That's where me and Ian started out, man. And we, you probably remember, I don't know, you probably remember sending stuff to Kevin and Steve before me and Ian got the job.
Yeah,
we got the job. We were doing college radio, and KISW actually set up be the next host of Metal Shop. And Metal Shop was a show that we had been, I mean, I remember, you know, smoking weed in high school and listening to Metal Shop. It was a show that was like this iconic show. So we never thought that we would, you know, take it over, but we won this contest. And then, you know, the next week we were the next host of Metal Shop. So, but it wouldn't have been that way without college radio, man. That's the
right. Yeah.
That's the,
yeah, it's one of those things, right? You know, you go away from home to college and you kind of rebuild yourself as a human being. Like it's all new people and, a lot of people go through, like, come out of their shell in college, and college radio is so important for that. Like, I wouldn't be the same person I am today had it not been for college radio and that whole experience. You know, it's one of those things where I don't really fear public speaking anymore. Things like that. Yeah. You know, I learned that in college. I got a business degree with a marketing emphasis, and awesome. I learned a lot about alcohol, and I use all three of those things near daily.
Dude, so what was your college radio show? Did you do a metal show, or did you do like a did you man the boards for like a, you know, the NPR show, or what did you do?
No, we actually were proudly unaffiliated with the NPR. That was a big thing with the station at the time.
Okay. Yeah.
They wanted in, and we kept saying no. It's completely student run. You know, that station was a breeding ground for radio talent in the local area.
Okay.
It was really common for alumni to get jobs at commercial stations within Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota, Iowa. So Thursday nights on the air since the early 80s was a show called The Heavy Metal Meltdown.
Yeah.
And I took it over with this other guy, Dozer.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran it together for 2 years. But we were on the show for 3. Dozer, I think, was on for 4. Just on the show and on the station in general. I actually was the music director and the program director.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
That was a lot of work. Because we were mostly an alternative like typical college
rock,
radio top 200 type
rock,
station. Everything from like Bayside to the Yeah Yeah Yeahs in our regular format, and a little heavier. It was kind of a cool mix. And then there were specialty shows only at night.
Yeah.
So like Wednesday was punk night or something. Thursday was metal. You know, we did a 12-hour show at the end of every semester from noon to midnight.
Yes.
Did a bunch of giveaways and listener interaction. It was pretty fucking wild, man. We kind of lived like a weird college rock star life in that regard.
Yeah.
You know, we got a bunch of free energy drinks from Rockstar for promos for the campus. It was a really good place to actually learn about the music business. I mean, I did a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
Almost none of which were good. I was pretty terrible at it.
Hey, I remember some of my first interviews too, dude.
Yeah, they were terrible. But I got to meet a lot of dudes in metal. Odorous from Gwar, Jamie Joss, the Dragon Force guys, just Killswitch.
Mm-hmm.
I did an interview with Adam Dees, one of the best interviews I'd ever done. So it kind of got me over that whole, these are guys in big bands. Like comfortable being around famous people. What's starstruck?
Yeah.
So get over that. So when I was at Metal Blade, I didn't really have any of that. I'm a new guy at a label, kind of weird. Oh, do you get to meet the bands? That kind of thing.
No, you weren't still a fanboy. You had worked.
Yeah.
At least, I mean, you know, there's always going to be an artist that makes us fanboy. For me personally, you know, I could be cool around, you know, X, Y, and Z. But then when I met the Deftones, I kind of, you know, made a kind of an ass out of myself. But, you know, it's all good. You know, you just kind of got to check yourself here and there. But
yeah. And look, I'm not going to say that not fangirling out or whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I haven't made an ass out of myself. That certainly happens anyway.
Sure.
But yeah, I've talked to Dave Grohl multiple times, and it's never been, oh my God. It's just, hey, Dave, because I'm often doing photos and stuff too.
Yeah.
So I've asked him to do photos with people just for like the Metal Blade socials.
Yeah.
So I kind of have an in there that I'm not, I'm providing some sort of service. I don't know. it's not just to say hi or whatever, but yeah, it's never really bothered me to approach people like that. As long as you can kind of read the room and know that you're going to completely ruin their day or something. But
hey man, I've said it before that the best part about being a radio show host is I get paid to be a punisher. I have a reason to go up and like bug people and punish them, and they have a reason to talk to me. So, you know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Usually my kind of rule for seeing a celebrity in LA or something, I'll just, say, hey, love your work. Thanks, man. And that's it. And just walk away.
Do you ever get recognized? Does anyone like, hey, you're that guy from Metal Blade Social?
I did when I was doing college radio.
Nice.
And in my college town, people would buy, cause they recognize me, and those are like our voices.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while, people would buy us drinks.
Nice.
Never really at Metal Blade, though, I don't think. We're not, you know, the people at Metal Blade outside of Brian aren't super public faces. We've been in things. If you watch, you know, things like the As I Lay Dying DVD or the Black Dahlia Murder DVD, there are There's some staff in there sprinkled throughout.
But for the most part,
we're not super public, and it's not about us either, right? It's
about
the band.
Yeah. Sweet, man. Well, did you do any internships or anything while you were in college, like with any labels, or did you just straight up apply for the job? Or
no, I did. I can't believe I totally forgot about that. That's kind of an important thing too. I interned at Victory Records, actually.
Okay.
Because they're in Chicago, so it was easy for me to do. I didn't have to travel across the country for no money and somehow afford to live. I did an internship there, actually under Mike Jacobau, who now works for Sumerian Records.
Okay, nice.
So yeah, I was doing the phone list to college radio, for my internship, working, Bury Your Dead record.
You probably sent that to Dead Air at KGRG, our old show.
Yeah. And then the BT Bam covers album.
Oh yeah. I got that CD. That's awesome.
I got to look up what Bury Your Dead record that was. I actually f***ing love that band.
Bury Your Dead is so stupid, but so awesome, dude.
Yeah,
I love it.
It was Beauty and the Breakdown, which is a great f***ing record.
Yeah, dude. That band, like I said, stupid, awesome. Like, and I don't think that they have would have any offense to that, because it's just like
there's
a time
amazing.
And a place for that, and when you're at the gym, you want to pump some iron, you got to listen to Bury Your Fucking Dead. Bury Your Fucking Dead.
It's self-aware, right? It's
exactly.
It's the same reason why I love Immortal.
Oh yeah.
Like it's honest, but it's also self-aware. So Beauty and the Breakdown, the story I've heard is that record really put Jason Suecof on the map.
Okay.
As a producer.
Nice.
Sonically, that album was I've been told the Black Dahlia Murder went to Jason Suecof because of that album.
Wow. Wow. All right.
So, yeah, there you go. Listen to that, especially if you listen to Cover Your Tracks and then that, like, sonically, how much different it's pretty crazy.
All right, man. I'll go back and listen to that one, dude. So you went from Victory to there. And actually, before I go, before we go into the Metal Blade thing, I'm curious, because, you know, we talked about doing some video stuff and all that that you do with Metal Blade. How much of a role do you still take in, like, talking to college radio and stuff like that? Is that still a huge part of your job? Is that the main part of your job still, or how much of a role does that take?
I wouldn't call it the main part of my job at this point, but it's a main part of it. I don't know. It's a good percentage, but it's really more of I don't do big call lists or really try to bother people.
Yeah.
Because I was a kid at college radio, I know what it's like to have records worked to me.
Oh yeah.
And a lot of the artists we work are really niche, or, you know, we know every station's not going to play, because especially within college radio, the metal shows are often very thematic.
Yeah.
With the genres they do play. So it's more about putting the right records in front of the right people. For example, if it's usually when somebody sends me their chart at the beginning of the week and I see they haven't played a record that I think they'll like, I'll nudge them like, hey, I think this is one you're super going to dig. Here's what it sounds like. That's how I really like to work things to radio, because college radio ultimately, if cultivated properly, can be a really cool, passionate street team for tons of different bands.
Absolutely.
They're tastemakers in their little corner of the universe. And if you spend your time at college radio trying to coerce college kids into playing albums for chart positions, you're just going to either, number one, annoy them, or two, make them resent you.
Yep.
And now you have spins that exist only on paper on a chart that never actually happened.
And is there CMG anymore, or like where do those charts go to?
Yeah, CMJ is gone. There's NACC and the one or two other charts that do kind of metal things here and there, but not the big central chart that CMJ really was. I mean,
exactly,
CMJ charts for a good chunk of time there were being on the top 200. CMJ really helped break a lot of bands in the 90s and 2000s, and that was really for not active rock, but more alternative type bands. That was actually a really important part of any marketing plan. And it was actually mentioned a lot in meetings in metal when I first started at Metal Blade. There were a lot of conversations about CMJ and FMQB charts.
Mm-hmm.
But with those all gone, it's kind of more just meetings. If radio is brought up, it's really if the band is trying to work something to radio on a national rock level. Otherwise, it's really never mentioned anymore,
right?
Unfortunately, it's just, hey, somebody's sending it to radio, right? Cool, got it. That's it.
That's funny. And I remember in college, you know, filling out weekly, I would count up all, I would literally go through our logs. I would count them up, how many times we played this and this and that. And then I would have to just enter it manually into a computer and send off our lists in order to get those CDs in the crates go keep on coming, you know?
Yeah. And I try to explain that to people now. And I think the collapse of any sort of centralized charting has really affected college radio in that I receive so much less charts.
Yes.
And I try to explain to people at radio, you have to send out your weekly chart so labels and radio promoters know that your station exists. Otherwise, we won't know to send stuff to you. You have to let us know where to send it. And a lot of stations just don't bother. They're just like, yeah, no, I don't do that. Okay. Well, do you want the albums? Yeah, cool. Send them over. And that's the last time I ever hear from that station.
Yep.
It's just kind of, there's
unless
so
it's
many.
Like, hey, can you get me into the Cannibal Corpse concert?
Yeah, and actually, when people reach out for tickets and interviews, that I love that. I mean, that's what we want to do is, you know, get them excited about bands coming to town and help spread the word and do some interviews. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I at least like that much. And there are still quite a few stations like that as well. It's just, I know there's so many more college stations out there just lurking in the shadows that I probably don't know about. Because, there's literally hundreds if you add them all up. So it's kind of like an endless task to try to track them all down and keep the info updated, you know?
Yeah.
We're talking about updating contact info. This is the most exciting podcast in the history of time.
Hey, man, we're getting super nerdy about this, dude. Yeah. This is the meta, like, metal inside, behind-the-scenes nerd talk. We're not talking to, you know, Jesse Leach from Killswitch here. We're talking to an insider behind the scenes with the minutia. This is the things I like to break down on a Wednesday night here. Well, let's get back to something people might actually be interested in. No, I'm just kidding. What were some important albums to you, like, growing up? What were some, like, keystone, like, your favorite records at, you know, and these days we have access to everything, but, like, back in the day, you know, there would be those, like, 5-10 CDs that you would have in your CD binder at all times. What were some of your keys, albums that you would go back to?
In Flames, Clayman.
Yes.
There was a Seven Dust record in there for a long time.
Okay, yeah.
Tool, Enema.
Mm-hmm. Classic.
Let's see. The first self-titled Killswitch.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's cool that you get to work
Seven
with
Angels,
them.
Seven Plagues.
Oh, dude. That band
Jasmine's
is
Lullaby.
Killer. You going to Furnace Fest? I feel like they got to play that, man.
Yeah, it's overdue for a show, right? The band I was in college actually recorded our album with the drummer from Seven Angels, Seven Plagues.
Oh,
he
that's
produced
so awesome.
It. And that's the shittiest I've ever felt as a drummer because he's unbelievable and I'm a hack. And it was my first time going into the studio as a college kid.
Yeah.
Just woefully unprepared, had never played to a click. Yikes.
So are you going to tell us the name of your band so we can look it up, or is it anywhere out there?
It was a band called Now a Murderer. And it was with a guitar player that was in that band, End This Day. Another guy from, now I can't fucking remember. But the singer was the original singer for Forever Is Forgotten.
Okay, so I'm assuming kind of metalcore.
Yeah, it was. I would say it's safe to call it kind of like a metalcore, Darkest Hour, Soilwork kind of melodic thing. Not melodic death metal, that's for sure, but more, you know, melodic hard. Hey, at the time we weren't really calling it metalcore. That wasn't super common yet.
Yeah,
it was. We would have just called this like a melodic hardcore band or something. I don't know.
I was just reading the Shai Hulud Decibel Hall of Fame that just came in the mail today, and Matt Fox, he was saying we didn't really call ourselves metalcore. We were just a hardcore band that was taking influences from all these different places.
Yeah. Matt Fox is one of my favorite human beings on earth. Yeah. I love that dude. He only ever addresses me by old lady names. He'll say like Mildred or hey Ruth, especially over email. It's fantastic.
Oh, that's amazing. So what was your band again?
Now a Murderer.
All right.
Was,
greatest hits phrase, coming out on that, Metal Blade 2021.
You're right. Yeah. It was a phrase from Clockwork Orange.
Nice.
You're now a murderer, little Alex thing.
Is that on Spotify?
No, I actually stopped paying TuneCore to keep it up because it was just costing me like $50 a year to keep this album up on DSPs that no one was listening to.
Yeah.
So I finally just gave up on it. You might be able to find it on YouTube, but I'm not really sure anymore.
Go to Wisconsin, find it in the dollar bin.
Yeah, there's a couple hundred CDs in the old the lead singer's closet. I know that for a fact.
Hit him
somewhere
up.
In Wisconsin.
Send it out with some Metal Blade mail order. See if you can make some new fans.
I did send the CD out to some labels and stuff when I was in college, and I actually got decent feedback on it. It was never going to get signed, but yeah. I did hear back. The best feedback I
no
really
tribunal?
Heard was,
you didn't get signed to Tribunal or, you know, anything like
no,
that?
No, no. The best response I think I did hear was that it was the best demo they've ever been sent by a college radio metal dude.
Nice. That's a lot
or at least better than most or something like that.
It's a very specific compliment.
Yeah, it's just essentially thanking me for it not being the worst thing that they'd ever heard, which, you know, I'll take it.
Dude, that's awesome. Well, okay, so those are some of the records that got you, you know, really pumped on metal, and then
God, we're really wandering, aren't we?
Sorry
about that.
It's all good, dude. That's why it's the podcast. Good. How did you get hired at Metal Blade, man? You just saw they had an opening for the college radio, you know, person. And
No, and I kind of glossed over that earlier, but the specifics were I was at the time booking shows on a couple of times basis. My band had played some shows with Veil of Maya.
Nice.
Some things like that.
Yeah.
So I was really active, and when we sent out our radio chart numbers every week, we'd say in those emails what the station was doing, giveaways, crazy contests, you know, pictures of our events, things
That's
like that.
Cool.
I mean, we did events at tattoo shops in town. We were super active in the local, you know, metal community.
Yeah.
And so when you put that in your email every week and you're sending it to radio stations, they obviously know you're doing it. And that's kind of what I tell people is I didn't plan on working at a label or in music in an official capacity. I was going to just keep doing metal in Wisconsin in whatever way I could on the side, you know, playing in bands, booking in shows,
yeah,
and just get a normal job to essentially pay for that hobby. But right before I graduated, Metal Blade actually reached out and said they were looking for someone and asked me to send a resume.
That's amazing.
And that was it. I did a couple of phone interviews and they said, all right, when can you start?
And so you just moved to California straight up like that?
Yeah, my grandma gave me $500 for my college graduation. And that was pretty much the only way I was able to afford the gas.
Damn.
So, yeah. Yeah, I was in some credit card debt for having an unpaid internship at Victory Records.
Oh, man.
So it was really tight for a little while there. It was, but, you know, that's what college is for, right? Somehow being too broke to eat, but not too broke to drink.
Exactly. Getting A, and then you got that dream gig. I mean, I would assume so.
It's crazy.
Like right out of college, dream gig at the premier, like, independent. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Metal Blade is independent record label, correct?
Yeah,
totally
independent. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Most of the metal labels out there at this point have been purchased by majors or larger companies in some capacity, but Metal Blade is pretty much, as far as I'm aware, the last one from the 80s that's still truly independent. There might be a couple of those out there, but most of our big competitors, I would say, it's fair to say they've been bought out, which is crazy. It's a wild world out there, man. And yeah.
That's nuts, man. And so day one, you show up, Metal Blade Records, and what year was this? Was it, what, 2008 or something?
2007, yeah.
2007. So you show up, I mean, and were you just like, all right, let's jump in. And how was it adapting to that, like, work environment straight out of college? And you just all guns blazing, just stoked on your life right there?
I was super green. Yeah, I was pretty excited, of course. I was super green. Really didn't know a lot about what I was doing. Just started working things at college radio and realized quickly social media was a thing we needed to be on. So, yeah, I started building that out. And at the same time, I had some HTML and CSS experience from helping my bands over the years build websites.
Yeah.
So I was able to actually help bands do crazy custom MySpace designs.
Oh, yeah. All right.
And I mostly reverse engineered code from better coders that really, truly understood how to build it. And I was good enough to kind of, you know, view source on Facebook, find the CSS. And it was being shared at the time, too, right? Everybody was like, bands were talking about that really actively. So I'd find code and I knew enough to be able to edit CSS and HTML to kind of twist it to my will rather than write it outright, if that makes sense.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, that was super important at the time. And I also taught myself Photoshop after having, I think I had one class in college. And taught myself Photoshop, and over the years have become a decent graphic designer.
That's awesome.
I mean, look, everybody's like, what, 1 hour's worth of YouTube tutorials away from almost any skill on earth. So there's really no reason not to be kind of a sponge as much as you can, especially for a business like this where we have so many random needs. What if somebody sends a file type that we don't understand? What am I going to do? Say, oh, I can't open that. I don't know how to open that. Or am I going to figure it out? And instead of being another sack of deadweight burden on another company, I'm just going to make it happen. You know,
there's a lot of
people out there that like to say no, or just, oh, I don't get it. And that's like the end of it. And rather than, if you don't get it, it's the time it took you to send that email that you don't get it. You could have Googled how to get it. So what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess I'm like that. You know, when we needed lyric videos, I said in a meeting, I'll figure it out. And I think the first one I did was for Hammers of Misfortune, 17th Street.
Okay.
And then I did Goat Whore, Carving Out the Eyes of God. I got to look that up. I actually don't remember. But yeah, it's just one of those things where you go on a site, you look it up, and you start pulling apart art in Photoshop and figure it out, right?
That's awesome. And being in such like a, I would assume you guys are, do you know how many, you know, people are in your office and how many people are employed by Metal Blade about?
Yeah, it's, in the US it's 12 or 14 now. I'd have to write the names down. We have a publicist we work with in Canada, two people in the UK, and a bunch of people in Germany as well. I don't remember the exact number there, but it's not as big as a lot of people think.
So it's a pretty lean team, and you guys always kind of got to, you know, step up and be multi-talented, and that's kind of cool about it. And it seems like in that's like probably one of the most positive parts about being a small staff is that you can get things done. I was listening to a hip hop podcast called No Jumper, and the guy was talking about how he had dealings with like a major like a hip hop or he was dealing with a major label, and it was just hard to get projects going because it was, you know, you'd have this idea and then it would just take so long for something because like everything has to be approved and everyone's, you know, on different schedules. And, you know, with your guys' kind of like a lean, small team, it seems like a lot more active.
Yeah, we can move super fast, and we've talked about that as well before, that bands a lot of times will come to us because we can get things done so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, manufacturing, we can get it about done as quickly as anybody else with the difficulty of vinyl right now. But as far as digital assets and things like that, yeah, we can turn stuff around really fast. And even budget approvals, we can turn around relatively fast because it's, for me, it's an email away, or I walk two office doors down and, you know, knock on a door and, you know, bring it up to somebody. Hey, check out that budget. We'd like to get this going as soon as possible. And that's really the only line of approval we need.
Nice.
So it's not as if you're running it up the chain two or three management levels and somebody's on vacation here or whatever. Yeah, it's really complicated. Major labels can do a lot of really cool things, but yeah, they do generally move a little bit more slow because there's so many more people and approvals, and it's just more structured because it's a lot larger. So as an indie, you know, we have the advantage of being light and fast, but we're definitely not as big as a lot of, you know, any major label really. So you kind of trade, we're like a pirate ship on the ocean with a couple cannons hoping for the best rather than a really slow, you know, 40 gun Spanish galleon, right?
Well, you had that pirate logo, so it makes sense.
Yeah, there you go. And I did find the Goat Whore lyric video. So the first real major lyric video I'd say I did was Goat Whore Collapse in Eternal Worth.
Nice.
And that came out in 2011.
That's a great record, by the way. That was a good record.
That's a really good album. And I look back on that now, and I don't understand how I even knew enough about After Effects to attempt that. That project file, I'm sure, is an absolute disaster of workflow. That's just really bad workflow. And it's one of those things over time, too, you learn how more effectively to work, not just how to get more done. Is we have to know the difference between cutting corners and just getting things done effectively. And when you learn a program as complex as After Effects, that stuff becomes really important, too, where you have to really learn a lot of hotkeys and things like that. And people kind of get weirded out about knowing a lot of hotkeys on a PC or something. for programs or whatever. There's still a lot of people out there that think, oh, what nerd? Oh, sorry, I know how to work efficiently.
Right.
Jeez, I didn't realize that was such an inconvenience to you. But
work
yeah,
smarter,
it's really
not harder,
important.
Right? Yeah.
Like, I don't know how basic computer courses, email literacy, those things aren't part of general education at this point. You shouldn't have to even address by the end of high school how to format an Excel, one Excel cell, or just how to copy and paste on PCs. And I don't know, the copy and paste might be a little bit too basic, but you get the idea.
No, totally.
There's a lot of things that, yeah, I don't get it. And you have to be super on your feet and be a sponge about those things to really be effective, I think, in any really highly competitive or like office type business. Otherwise you just fall behind.
You're a very effective metal sponge, Vince.
I try to be. God, that was, I feel like that was super rambly, man. What the hell are we talking about?
No, dude. Hey,
what time is it? Who is this?
Oh my God. Now,
well, you wanted it more like the Rogan podcast. So there you go.
There we go. Exactly, man. Have you ever done DMT?
No, definitely
okay.
not.
All right. so let me ask, what's today these days? Like what's a day in the life of Vinta at work? What's your schedule like, or is it, you know, up in the air day to day?
Well, I just switched my schedule officially, and Metal Blade's super cool about that, about kind of being able to build the schedule that makes sense for you.
Cool.
Some of us come in early, some of us come in later. I changed my schedule to be 6 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Okay.
So I get in super early, and if there's stuff from Europe, I can deal with that while they're still in the office for a little bit. And I really get a couple hours at the office to be able to dive into some more complex video work.
Nice.
It gets to be a little difficult to concentrate on really tedious animations when you're making a lyric video, while there's a lot of noise at the office or a lot of really last minute requests. Because a lot of things, like we talked about moving fast, a lot of things come in day of when a lot of people are in the office. We need this social post image, or we need a tour ad mat done, or we need help with a pre-ordered t-shirt design. I also do occasionally do t-shirt designs.
Okay.
So you kind of have to be available to jump on those things as they pop up, obviously depending on the urgency. So it becomes a lot more difficult to just dive into a video for an extended period of time. So it's really nice to be able to get in early and then leave around 3 and, you know, go to the gym and kind of have a second part of the day rather than I always felt like a 9-to-6 grind was the worst time, because you really don't get a morning, and at night you just want to go to bed right away. It's just like a weird shift for me. But yeah, it's really just come in, deal with Europe, any requests that are immediate, and then dive in the video stuff. And then the afternoon, it's just chaos and catching up on emails and radio charts and all that type of thing.
And jabronis like me requesting interviews and stuff. And you
yeah,
know, have to,
yeah, there's still a lot of that. And that's what I like. You know, I want bands to stay busy and feel like people care, because it's hard, man. Developing bands and getting people to get on board with bands, even bands that have been around for a little while, it takes time.
Yeah.
I had a really cool conversation with Alex Wade from Whitechapel a couple months back about how he feels now it's finally really working for them, that people have seen, I think he phrased it something like, people have seen the name enough that we know, you know, they know we're not going away, and it's just like, all right, I should probably listen to this band.
No, man.
Something like that.
I agree.
You know, it took them a long time to really build in Europe. So they would do huge shows here and then go to Europe. And it was a little, it takes time to cross the Atlantic in either direction. Right. And they've got that there too. So the work for them is really starting to pay off. And that, I think that speaks volumes to bands, because they're how many records in 5, 6 and over 10 years now.
Yeah.
And that's how long they feel like it's taken for them to get to a place where they can finally do this for a living, and they have enough fans to be able to actually turn it into a legitimate actual business.
They took a big risk with the new album, but I think it paid off in dividends, man. I think that new record is just, it's different in a sense, like with the melodies, but I love it. It's my favorite Whitechapel record yet, so.
It's fantastic. I think the record before it was still good. I think there was a couple of really cool songs in there. The Void was one I remember being really cool that I wish would have been a single.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Valley was just such a jump. We knew they were going to try some singing.
Yeah.
I just don't think we knew it was going to be that well executed. It's so hard for a metal band to do that and sound honest just I think it's also hard for an active rock band to do not clean vocals and sound honest. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't fit. It's weird looking shoes or something. I don't know. It just doesn't work. But yeah, Whitechapel really does it. And I don't know. It's, I don't want to fan out about it too much, but yeah, it's, there's people in the office that liked Whitechapel before that have said they become one of their favorite bands on the label.
That's awesome.
Just now because of this record. And maybe it's because their older stuff really wasn't for everybody. Mm-hmm. It was definitely like more younger appealing music. And I think what fans may or may not realize, maybe they do, maybe I'm not giving them enough credit, but these guys aren't going to write the same music they wrote when they were 18.
Yeah.
And who
they're
would,
not a MySpace really? Deathcore band anymore.
Right. Yeah. I mean, who would? There's, you know, there's not a band on the planet that I feel like enjoys playing old music with, you know, a couple exceptions. You get tired of it and you grow as a musician and you kind of do something different. That's not to say bands need to do a jazz revival, but if they kind of morph and mutate the sound over time, that's just what they're going to do. And look, the fact that almost essentially every band on the planet has gone through some changes over time, why should it ever come as a surprise at this point, right?
Absolutely, man. And dude, you said it well. That's cool that there's people jumping aboard and really stoked on the new record. You kind of hinted there, like you said, oh, we kind of had an idea that they wanted to do some singing and change it up a little bit. Do you guys get insight like that? Do you guys talk to the bands like before they go into the record or before they go into record a new album? Or is it kind of just, you know, you get what you get and sometimes, you know, you just kind of got to work with what you get. How is
it
that?
It depends on the band.
Okay.
It really depends on the relationship with the band. You know, if it's a death metal band from Germany, when we get it, and it's whomever has that relationship with the band will have that conversation.
Okay.
Or
yeah.
Whoever was responsible for signing the band probably talked to them about it. But it's not a thing that we actively seek out for approvals or anything like that. It's more they're excited to fill us in. We do generally require, especially bands we haven't worked with before or just signed or, you know, whatever, send us demos. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to hear some demos if possible before we drop a bunch of money on studio time. So there's a little bit of that, but I've never seen us get demos and say, this sucks, you have to do it again. I've never seen it happen.
That's awesome.
It's more just, I don't know, like Job for a Cowboy, I remember for a time there when they had new members, they did the Gloom EP. And that was, I'm pretty sure they kind of did that to just test the waters with the new songwriters and kind of get the juices flowing or something like that. Especially when bands have new songwriters and things, you just don't know what the songwriting dynamic's going to be like. And yeah, if there might be something exciting. And this might sound really superficial. I'm not really sure. I honestly don't know where I am. We want to be able to tell a marketing story. We want our retail guy to be able to go to stores and say they have this exciting new guitar player that wrote these killer new songs.
Yeah.
But obviously with more marketing fluff, but we have to be able to tell that to people. So we're involved in the band in that capacity where we generally speaking know what's going on with the band. Not always, but we usually have a good idea. Or as good about an idea bands want to let us know, really. Just so we're able to paint a cool picture of the band and sell them as artists, because
totally.
Metal is such a personal thing. When people get attached to bands, they know about the members a lot of times. I mean, obviously not every band, but the more people can relate to a band and feel like the band are cool dudes that they want to hang out with, the easier it is to really gain long-term fans. And those bands are often the types of bands like Black Dahlia Murder that'll hang out at the merch booth and take photos and things like that. So if we're involved in the album recording process, it's really just more on that creative level.
These people are the fans are dedicated, you know, and that's even we're even seeing like kind of that view in like underground hip hop music. I follow a lot of that stuff, and there's a lot of people that are following people all the way up from their SoundCloud, and even if it's like grimy, terrible basement recording hip hop, you know, they'll follow them and they'll give them more likes than the, you know, thing that's being pushed on them from like a mainstream label. It's cool to see. Like you said, kind of a story and people following along and really just, you know, being, you know, they're able to see through what's kind of fabricated and they're able to see what's real. And it's cool.
Oh, yeah. metal fans have some of the sharpest bullshit detectors on the planet. And the one thing I always say is we don't sign bands because we want to change who they are. We sign bands because we already like what they're doing.
Nice.
There's been times where we've signed bands. I've seen it once or twice where the record we put out was sonically different than the record before that. And people often associate that with, oh, Metal Blade made them change their sound. It's often the fact that maybe that band had a bigger recording budget than they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
So they were able to actually get the sound they wanted. And for better or for worse sometimes, right?
They had options, yeah.
Yeah, we're never involved. Like, if a band has something sonically specific about them, we obviously don't want to change that. We're not going to make Midnight do an overproduced, polished studio album. That just doesn't make any sense. But that also doesn't mean that I'm going to tell Brody from Rivers and Isle not to put saxophone on his record.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, you want to try saxophone? Sick. I want to hear that.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah.
Just give them a budget and let them play with it and you know, work with it and see what comes out with it. If you trust the band, you trust the art, then fuck it. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, that's really it. Yeah. If we're not honest about that from the beginning, then it's, you know, I don't think it works.
So I got a lot of people probably listening to this podcast that maybe are, you know, in bands, in music. What's advice would you give them if like they really want to take that next step and maybe send their, you know, CD or send their MP3s or really get the attention of a label, not just Metal Blade, but, you know, maybe a smaller label or something like that. What advice would you give to young musicians who want to take that next step and, you know, maybe be on a roster of a rad record, metal record label?
Super polished socials, claim your Apple Music and Spotify profiles, real nice YouTube channel, be active on Twitter and Instagram. I believe Rivers and Isle, in one of their studio videos, said that Conjurer was on their US tour because of Twitter.
Oh, nice.
So if you're active on Twitter, creating content, talking to other musicians, sharing their content, sharing yours, you know, just caring about the scene and then being present physically in your local scene as well.
Yeah.
If you're doing all those things and you're not a complete pile of garbage and the music you're doing is good, it should build over time. And labels really want to see bands now ideally that are already making things happen on their own. We can't really, I don't know that there's a label on earth right now that would be confident enough to say we can make something happen from nothing. Because we don't really, we're tastemakers to be sure,
yeah,
but we don't really control what people give a shit about.
It's a good point.
So we have to bring things on board that people already seem to give a little bit of shit about at least. So there's something for us to build. Otherwise it's just such an impossible task. I can't take a band that has no following to a booking agent and ask them to book that band.
What's their draw? Who knows?
Yeah, I you get like one of those a year with a booking agent as a favor if he or she really likes the music. But you can't do that with like 10 developing bands. It's not going to happen. So what are you going to do? You're going to put out an album. You might get a couple reviews. Maybe a few college stations play it. They play a couple local shows. End of list. The end. Then they'll sit for 2 years and go, well, I guess we should do that again. You already have to be trading shows regionally and being able to route tours. There's bands routinely on independent labels that still route their own tours if they need to. It's just something, not only should a local band know how to do that, it's something they really need to do if they figure out what it's like to live in a van together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm firmly of the belief you have no business signing to a record label as a metal band if you've not traveled in a van together for at least a week. And I don't think that's that big of an ask. It's just there's a lot of people that say they'd like to tour until they tour. And if you see a band get signed and the next record, there's two of the people left and three new members, I would put – if that would be the easiest game of roulette ever. The size of that corner of the wheel would be like 70%.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put my money on that. That they went on tour and hated it and stayed home.
It's a good point. Damn, that's
funny. I'm sorry. I guess I didn't ask if I should swear on this.
No, dude, it's all good. This is not live, so I'm just using Adobe Audition, and I'm pressing the F8 key whenever we get swears. So that's a little indicator.
Drop that tag. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, cool. what are some rad? I mean, we all know about the big bands on Metal Blade. We know that our number one album of last year for Metal Shop was Cattle Decapitation. We all know about the Amon Amarth. We know about the Cannibal Corpses. So what are some you guys put out a lot of releases, and to be fair, I think a lot of them probably go under the radar of people that, you know, maybe just have a peripheral vision. You know, we don't always just look at like label, you know, lists. We kind of maybe just look at what's new on Spotify or what's new in the record store. What are some kind of albums that may have gone under the radar as of like 2019 or, you know, as of late?
2019, I'm bringing up our website to look.
Yeah.
Because we do so many, and one thing I've gotten worse at over the years is time. Sure. Remembering when that show or that album came out, right?
Yeah.
Somehow, I'm just getting terrible at that.
It doesn't have to be 2019. Maybe, you know, within the last couple of years, just some.
So, the new Angel Witch is fucking awesome.
Yeah.
That's a band that's been around for a long time, and there's a lot of new metal fans that I think, you know, younger metal fans that would really dig Angel Witch. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes old school metal really dives into the cheesiness too
much.
Nostalgia,
for
newer metal fans that aren't into that sound. Angel Witch really rides that line between early Metallica and kind of 70s metal, where the vocals are just really relatable and you feel like you could sing along to it drunk at a bar.
Totally.
So that's one I think people should definitely check out. Hate from Poland is a new signing for us, but they've been around for a really long time.
Yeah, that record's kinda killer.
Carrying the torch for super brutal, like true black metal, like, you know, black and death metal anyway.
Yeah,
There's a bunch, man. I don't know. It's frustrating because sometimes you want these records to do so much better than they do, and you feel like so many more people would be into it if they gave it a chance. It's just there's an impossible number of albums out there, and there's really only so much time that you have to listen to music, right? And when people go back to music now, they want to hear familiar stuff. So it's a big ask these days for someone to try something new. But Master Boot Record is something I think a lot of people should check out. We signed it. It's out of Italy, and he's got 6 or 7 albums up on Spotify that he's released in the last 3 years. And it's, have you heard it?
What?
Master Boot Record.
Is that a Mastered Boot Record?
Master Boot Record. It's a it's a reference to a computer process.
No, I have not heard this.
It's synthesized metal. It's metal that sounds like it's played and performs on a computer from the 80s with drum samples.
That sounds awesome.
It
and fun.
I guess on paper it could very much sound not awesome, but it sounds
unique at least.
wait, say that again.
It sounds unique at least.
It's super unique, and it's not synthwave, but I would strictly put it. I would definitely put it in that category. But it's written by an unbelievable songwriter.
Okay.
He's the virtuoso piano player, and you'll hear that when you listen to it. The songs, it's just weird to kind of be listening to something with no guitars.
Yeah.
But it's, you can headbang to it because it's still distorted and weird. You'll have to check it out. We have his album coming out in a couple weeks on Metal Blade, and that's going to be pretty cool. We're just going to release it. We're not doing any advanced tracks.
Yeah.
It's just going to come out.
And if you like it, you like it.
That's really it. I mean, right, like, who cares about leaks anymore? Because we so desperately want people to hear new stuff. I don't care if they risk giving their computer a virus for no reason to hear something they might be able to hear for free on the internet anyway.
Yeah.
So really, who cares about leaks? It's really just we really want people to be into new metal, obviously. And there's so many old bands coming back that are releasing albums for the first time. So we're kind of doing the reverse of that.
Yeah.
Trying to introduce new bands to bands that were around 20, 30 years ago.
So Boot Record, we have a segment on Metal Shop called the Dub Sack, where we play bong rip sound effects and some tripped out music that people might, you know, enjoy when medicating. That sounds like something that we might want to throw on during the Dub Sack.
Absolutely. His last couple records, one of them's Interrupt Request, is pretty incredible. It's something I listen to on a pretty regular basis, especially at the office or when I'm concentrating. Internet Protocol is another incredible record. All the songs are pretty much useless for you to even say on the radio. The song names are all references to computer processes.
Okay.
or parts. So yeah. it's not like, yeah. But one of my favorite songs on Interrupt Request is IRQ4 Mouse. And the song before that is IRQ3 Modem, IRQ2 Cascade. It has to do with computer processes. I'm a geek for computers. I just don't know a lot of the computer science.
That's awesome.
You know, tech side. But this is what it's all references to. He has a lot of weird puzzles that you have to solve.
Oh my God.
To access content. That's all like cipher and computer related. It's crazy, man.
This guy's a genius. Oh, wow.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Vince, well, we're speaking with Vince Edwards here from Metal Blade Records. I just got a couple more questions. I'm not going to keep you too long.
I'm so sorry.
Dude, don't be sorry. You got to get back to gaming. what are some albums you're most excited for in 2020? I know you can't put the cat out of the bag on too much, but what are some releases to get us hyped about in 2020 for Metal Blade?
Well, the God of the Thrones coming out really soon.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. God of the Thrones getting back to doing satanic stuff. And away from the trilogy of World War I records they had, which are really cool. But yeah, God of Thrones, a band I've loved for a really long time. I mean, one of the best original kind of, I don't know if they're original, but they're old school enough, especially for new school fans, to be an old school, legitimate European death metal band.
Totally.
I don't know. I still think there's room for people that don't, they really carry the torch for that really badass old school European death metal sound. You know, there's not a lot of bells and whistles. I feel like I'm selling this so terribly, but yeah, it's just badass old school death metal from Europe. What more do you want?
Exactly.
Sung by an insanely tall Danish dude.
And then it's about Satan, so badass. If you like Behemoth, if you like, even that band Hate we just talked about, it's a kind of blackened death metal.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Way more death than blackened, for sure. But Rivers and Isles going to record at some point, but it's not going to come out this year, and obviously that's pretty insane to see what they do next. I know Allegion is going to be recording soon. They actually just recorded a super secret cover that we're going to drop soon, another cover song of an old band.
Ooh.
So that's cool. I actually flew to Denver and recorded some studio footage of that.
Nice.
So we're talking about some ideas to float that out into the universe, and there's some funny promo ideas the band has, and that's an important thing I always want to mention too. Records are more successful and more fun to work with when the bands are really involved in the marketing and advertising side, when they want to help. There's a lot of times where that doesn't happen. The band is either just not really involved, or they're just bad at it, or they're like, well, how do computers work? I don't know how to do a Facebook post. Some of those bands are still out there, but when the bands are super involved and into it, man, it's awesome. That's what really makes Master Boot Record, Rivers and Isle, the Black Dahlia Murder. That's what really makes those all tick. Is the band is just super involved in every step of the creative process, and it's a really cool just collaboration of awesome creative human beings. That's how you get things like the Black Dahlia Murder dungeon, the Dungeons and Dragons RPG they're doing. Because it's the band, their merch guy, their manager, everybody working together to make things happen. I get one of the things I could say to an unsigned band is that when you do get signed, the amount you work and show that you're working will really make people work harder for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true. That's just a general true thing for life. But if bands get signed, take the foot off the gas pedal and just expect everybody to do the lifting for them, it becomes a band that's just not as fun to work with. And you
gotta
feel
hit
like,
the gas harder, man.
Yeah, it's like, well, if you don't care, then why should I? And it's one of those things where I really truly feel that if what you're doing is good and people like it, you'll get out of it what you put into it.
Totally.
Man, that's cheesy. Holy hell.
Hey, it's all good. Inspirational quotes here by Vince Edwards from Metal Blade.
I never thought you'd get that. Yikes.
Live, laugh, love, brother. Okay, so.
Oh, man. That's a red flag if you're on a Tinder date. You see that in a house.
Oh, my God.
Get out.
Absolutely.
Get out.
Hey. I got nothing for you. That's absolutely true. So what keeps you sane, dude? What, with all your crazy work schedule, and doing all this awesome, like, stuff with metal bands and kind of having this dream job, what keeps you sane, outside of it? I see that you still do MMA, or?
I've been training kickboxing for a couple of years.
Oh,
nothing
kickboxing,
serious.
Kickboxing.
Just
okay.
Really, casual bag work a couple times a week at a couple different gyms now. The one I'm at is pretty cool right now. There's some fighters that train there, and you know, nothing like on the UFC level, just local people or guys that, you know, used to fight more professionally and kind of just have local gym gigs, but you're still learning from people that have actual ring experience.
So you're not beginning, you're not going to be going up against Josh Barnett or anything anytime soon.
No, definitely not. But yeah, that, and I have a pretty ridiculous anger streak and an anger issue from just, you know, growing up and hearing people screaming and being angry as the first reaction to any sort of stress. So I probably have some therapy in my future and just really trying to learn how to remove my ego from the creative process as much as possible. I used to get a lot more bent out of shape about, you know, the video and photo work I did if bands didn't like it. You know, I really beat myself up over not being better at it. Just really, I wouldn't say I'm a perfectionist, but it's one of those things where I see what other people are doing. And if I'm not as good as that, then what's the point? And you kind of have to, you have to be able to turn that off to be able to stay sane. And yeah, they just using After Effects and things outside of work for personal projects helps me stay sane, because it helps kind of hit the reset button on that and forces me to learn new skills and pick up different ideas. And I'm having fun, but I'm also doing things for work. And, you know, backpacking is awesome in Southern California, the desert, the mountains. You have a couple different choices, so that's pretty cool.
You got to get up here to the Northwest sometime. There's some beautiful mountains.
I know. I definitely need to do that. I have some friends up there too, so I have really good excuses. But yeah, just being able to not stare at a glowing rectangle, because, you know, what did I do today? I stared at a computer from 6 to 3, came home, immediately started staring at a computer again, and now I'm here staring at a computer. And what kind of long-term psychological and physiological damages are we enduring by staring at glowing rectangles with immediate and constant feedback all day between work and social media? There's no way, there's no way on any level that that's healthy. So you got to be able to get out into the woods and just build a fire and stare at space.
Get away from the black mirror. dude, it's been awesome talking to you, man. And I just have one last question here for you. And it's
You dropped out there for a second. I moved the volume thing, so I don't know if I missed anything after I rambled there for a second.
Oh, no, it's all good. I said that we got to kind of disconnect from the black mirror every once in a while. And I just have one question here for you. It's a question we ask pretty much every band that we've talked to since, and we're going on 10 years now doing Metal Shop. So we have asked this to every band. Pick a scar on your body and tell us a story of how you got it, Vince.
I have a scar on my nose from when I was a toddler.
Okay.
And the story I've been told, and I don't think I think it's too early for me to really have a memory. I was told that my parents were at a barbecue or a bar, I don't remember which, and somebody broke a glass bottle, and a shard of a glass beer bottle sliced my nose open good 2 inches.
Oh my God.
And my mom said she held the wound together and then super glued it, I think. And yeah, holy, I have a scar forever. So yeah, drunk at a Wisconsin bar or barbecue.
Good old Midwest.
Well, I was too young to be drunk, but yeah.
That's amazing, dude. That's awesome. That's hardcore. That's like, you're just regular, Mick Foley, Mankind style there, man.
Right. Yeah. Hardcore. As a toddler.
That's awesome, man. So, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to me tonight, man. And this is Vince Edwards from Metal Blade Records. Before we go, is there any place we can follow along with some of the work that you mentioned, like some of the lyric videos, some of the shots you do, some of the music videos, and, you know, shout out your socials or whatever.
Yeah, subscribe to the Metal Blade YouTube. It's Metal Blade Records. Pretty easy to find. I really want to get us to 1 million subscribers, so they have to send us one of those dumb plaques.
Yeah.
That's my goal for 2020 going into 2021. We have about 100,000 subs to go, so pour it on. And yeah, I've got a website, VinnyEdwards.com, and you can link to my socials from there. That's any new videos usually go up there, and Metal Vinny on Instagram if you want to see concert photos, because that's, you know, concert photos in space, that's really all I care about posting on there at this point. So there you go, man.
That's awesome, man. What video game are you going back to after we hang up the phone?
I think I'm gonna play Mordow, man. It's super metal, it's brutal. Decapitating people on the internet is a perfect stress relief after a long day.
Do you have like a, do you play online? How can people play up against you?
Mordow, it's on Steam, on PC. My Steam ID, it's, dude, it's like Skype. I don't know what the hell it is. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I'm Metal Vinny on there, but I don't think that's my Steam ID. I'm not joking. I actually don't know. Yeah, I think it's just Metal Vinny on Steam.
Metal Vinny. Look him up. Look him up.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Tell him Metal Shop sent you. Dude, Vince, thanks so much for talking, man. It's always a pleasure talking with you, dude.
Hey, appreciate it, man.
Have a good one, bro.
All right, hail Satan.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.